Rishibhir Bhagavata Gitam Chandobhir Vivitai Pratak Brahma Sutra Padaischaiva Hetumadbhir Vinishchitaihi Rishibhir Bahudha Gitam Chandobhir Vivitai Pratak Brahma Sutra Padaischaiva Hetumadbhir Vinishchitaihi. Rishibhir Bahudha Gitam Chandobhir Vivitai Pratak Brahma Sutra Padaischaiva Hetumadbhir Vinishchitaihi. Rishibhir Bahudha Gitam Chandobhir Vivitai Pratak Brahma Sutra Padaischaiva Hetumadbhir Vinishchitaihi. Anyone else? Rishibhi, by the wise sages, Bahudha, in many ways, Gitam, described, Chandopi, by Vedic hymns, Vivitaihi, various, Pratak, variously, Brahma Sutra, of the Vedanta, Padaihi, by the aphorisms. Cha, also. Eva, certainly. He tu madbhihi, with cause and effect. Vinishchitaihi, certain. That knowledge of the field of activities and of the knower of activities is described by various sages in various Vedic writings. It is especially presented in Vedanta Sutra with all reasoning as to cause and effect. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the highest authority in explaining this knowledge. Still, as a matter of course, learned scholars and standard authorities always give evidence from previous authorities. Krishna is explaining this most controversial point regarding the duality and non-duality of the soul and the supersoul by referring to a scripture, the Vedanta, which is accepted as authority. First, he says, this is according to different sages. As far as sages are concerned, besides himself, Vyasadeva, the author of the Vedanta Sutra, is a great sage, and in the Vedanta Sutra, duality is perfectly explained. And Vyasadeva's father, Parashara, is also a great sage, and he writes in his books of religiosity, Aham Tvam Cha Tatanye, we, you, I, and the various other living entities are all transcendental, although in material bodies. Now we are falling into the ways of the three modes of material nature according to our different karma. As such, some are on higher levels and some are in the lower nature. The higher and lower natures exist due to ignorance and are being manifested in an infinite number of living entities. But the supersoul, which is infallible, is uncontaminated by the three qualities of nature and is transcendental. Similarly, in the original Vedas, a distinction between the soul, the supersoul, and the body is made, especially in the Katha Upanishad. There are many great sages who have explained this, and Parashara is considered principal among them. Om Ajnana Timirantasya Giranjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Shriyam Rupa Kada Mahyam Tathati Shapatantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jata Pada Kamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Shagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitams Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitamscha Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindho, Dina Bandho, Jagatpate, Gopesha, Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta, Namostute, Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi, Radhe Brindavaneshwari, Prashabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami Hori Priye, Vansha Kopatarubhyascha, Kripa Sindho Vyayevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vashadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Rishibir Bahuta Gitam Chandokir Vivitai Pratak Brahma Sutra Padais Jaiva Hetumad Pir Vinishchitai. In this chapter, Lord Krishna begins by describing three things: the Kshetra, the Kshetrajna, and the Supreme Kshetrajna. Kshetra means the field of activities. Just as you have an agricultural field, so there's a field of activities. This body, as Krishna says, is the field of activities. We can act with this body, with its senses. Every one of us has a different field of activities. I have my body, you have your body. And I'm the knower of my field. I know if I have a toothache, I know if I'm touching something soft or something hard. But I don't know what's going on with your body. If you have a toothache, I don't feel it. If you're touching something, I don't have that experience. Because I'm a different person than you are. So every one of us is an individual knower of our individual field. And there's a difference, of course, between the field and the knower, just as there's a difference between the farmer and his farmland. So the field is this body, and I'm the person who knows this body. The body is changing from childhood body, youthful body, old body, but I'm the same person. The field may change, but the knower of the field is the same. So I'm not this body, but I'm the knower or owner of this body. And then Krishna says, Kshetrajnam chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetreshu. There's another owner, another knower of the field, but he's the supreme knower. I know my body, you know your body, but the Supreme Lord knows all the different bodies. I own this one, you own that one, but he owns all of them. So So he's the supreme knower, the super knower. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of apartment buildings where I have my apartment, you have yours, but the landlord actually is the owner of all the apartment buildings, all the apartments in the building. So I'm the secondary owner, but he's the primary owner. He's the person who knows all about all the different apartments. I only know my one. So the Supreme Lord is in the heart of every living being, and he knows everything about all of us. But we only know our own individual selves and our own individual bodies. So the Lord is describing that, this topic, here in this section of Bhagavad Gita. And he says, well, this is not just according to me. This is Krishna's humility. He's the supreme authority. But he quotes authorities also. He sets the example, and I'm not just going to say it, but I'm going to cite the previous authorities as well. This is the process of speaking in spiritual circles, to say something which is upheld by authority. Why spiritual circles? In scientific circles also, or in any scholarly circle, we say something and we fill our papers with footnotes saying this has been supported by Professor such and such, this has been cited by Professor such and such. So I'm not just talking off the top of my head. Other authorities are there that I'm relying on. So Krishna himself sets that standard and says it's not just according to me, but it's according to other authorities. Rishi Bir Bahudha Gita, there are many sages who are authorities. And Prabhupada mentions Vyasadeva and Parashara Muni. So they confirm the view that Krishna is given. And now Srila Prabhupada continues. The word Chandopi refers to various Vedic literatures. The Taittiriya Upanishad, for example, which is a branch of the Yajurveda, describes nature, or the material body, the living entity, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated before, kshetra is the field of activities, and there are two kinds of kshetra-gya, or knowers of the field, the individual living entity and the Supreme Living Entity. As stated in the Taittiriya Upanishad 2.9, Brahma-puchcham pratishtha. Now we're going to get into something a little technical, but interesting also. There is a manifestation of the Supreme Lord's energy known as annamoya, dependence upon food for existence. This is a materialistic realization of the Supreme. Then, in pranamaya, after realizing the absolute truth in food, one can realize the absolute truth in the living symptoms or life forms. In Jnanamaya, realization extends beyond the living symptoms to the point of thinking, feeling, and willing. Then there is Brahman realization called Vijnanamaya, in which the living entity's mind and life symptoms are distinguished from the living entity himself. The next and supreme stage is Anandamaya, realization of the all-blissful nature. Thus, there are five stages of Brahman realization, which are called Brahmapuchcha. Out of these, the first three, Anamaya, Pranamaya, and Jnanamaya, involve the fields of activities of the living beings. Transcendental to all these fields of activities is the Supreme Lord, who is called Anandamaya. The Vedanta Sutra also describes the Supreme by saying, Anandamaya Vyasat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is by nature full of joy. To enjoy his transcendental bliss, he expands into Vijnanamaya, Pranamaya, Jnanamaya, and Anandamaya. In the field of activities, the living entity is considered to be the enjoyer, and different from him is the anandamaya. This means that if the living entity decides to enjoy in dovetailing himself with the anandamaya, then he becomes perfect. This is the real picture of the Supreme Lord as the supreme knower of the field, the living entity as the subordinate knower, and the nature of the field of activities. One has to search for this truth in the Vedanta Sutra or Brahma Sutras. So this is, Brahma means the supreme. The topic of realization is the supreme. And here it's indicated that the supreme is realized in different stages. The lowest stage is anamoya. Food is God. What is there? Something that you see on the taxis? What is that? Sometimes in India on the taxis you'll see a slogan. What is that? Roti is God? Something like that. But God is bread. And my God is bread. So that's a certain realization of the Supreme, that the Supreme existence is food. And we see that some people just live for food. Or the animals, you see that, especially like little fish, you see them in your fish tanks. They're just always moving their lips, moving their mouths, feeding. So there are some living entities, that's their whole life, is food. That's all they know, is food. And there are some human beings even who, practically speaking, don't go beyond that. Annamoya. If we get food, we get it, we've got everything.
The word of God, that's a bread. Canada, whatever word, that's all that.
That's a different subject matter. That's true, but that's aside from the point here. But it's true. Annamoya. So food as the supreme. And, all right, food is a manifestation of the Supreme. If God is everything, God is also food. But if we don't go beyond food, we don't have a very high realization of God. So that's called annamoya. Then, pranamoya. Pranamoya means just staying alive. Life is God. Life is God. And again, we see living beings, they're just concerned with staying alive. You see the birds eating, and while they're eating, they're looking this way and that way to see that their life is not going to be threatened. So, again, it's a realization of God, and so sometimes it's expressed as being a sort of a mystical realization. Life is God. Just life is God. You know, I celebrate life. Just that there's life is considered. That's my realization of God. What is God? God is life. So that's called pranamoya. Prana means the symptoms of life. Anamoya, pranamoya. Then ganamoya. That we go beyond just living to thinking. The world of the mind, the world of thought. Someone says that, you know, God is thought. And they live, their life is all about thinking. It's not just about eating. Eating, they just do. Staying alive, yeah. But it's all about thinking, intellectual activity. And that's their understanding of God. And it's also a fact, God has extended himself into food, into the symptoms of life, into intellectual activity. So God is present in all these forms, or the Supreme is present in all these forms. Then we go beyond that, vijnanamoya. Vijnanamoya is spiritual realization, to realize oneself as a spiritual living being. One experiences, yes, the one's spiritual identity, and one thinks that spirit is God, or one thinks that I'm God. But higher than Vijnanamoya is Anandamoya. Anandamoya means the supreme blissful entity. And that's Krishna, or God himself. So God is everything, and God is seen in all of these different ways, or realized in all these different ways. But the supreme realization is realization of God as the supreme blissful personality of Godhead, Krishna. Prabhupada continues. It is mentioned here that the codes of the Brahma Sutra are very nicely arranged according to cause and effect. Some of the sutras or aphorisms are Na Vyad Ashutehe, Natma Ashutehe, and Paratu Tach Shutehe. The first aphorism indicates the field of activities, the second indicates the living entity, and the third indicates the Supreme Lord, the summum bonum, among all the manifestations of various entities. So, Brahma Sutra Padaischaiva Hetu Madhpir Vinishchitai. Srila Prabhupada is elaborating on this point, that the nature and the living entity and the Supreme Lord, these three different truths, the body, the knower of the body, and the super knower, are all described in the Vedanta Sutra with reference to cause and effect. Maybe we'll stop here and see what sort of questions there might be so far. Excuse me? I couldn't hear you.
Uttama, this realization that...
Uttama?
Yeah, when the devotee sees God in everyone, everything.
Yes?
Yeah. The higher realization.
Yes? Sees God and serves God. Yes. Some other question?
Mm-hmm. We say that the body is changing and the soul is staying the same.
Again?
That we say that the body is
changing.
And the soul is staying the same.
Yes.
And yet we say that there is some progression in spiritual realization.
Yes. That's the content of what the soul understands. But the person who's doing the understanding is the same person. I used to think that I was this body. Now I understand that I'm soul. And I may make further spiritual progress and understand something more. But I'm the same person. Whether I'm stupid or a little smarter, or maybe still a little smarter, or whether I'm ignorant or getting a little knowledge, a little more knowledge, I'm the knower. The knower of not much, the knower of maybe a little more, the knower of still more. So although my realization may grow, I'm the person who's having the realization. I'm not changing. Whether I'm in ignorance or I'm in knowledge, I'm the same I. But the situation in which I find myself is different. Isn't that true? Yeah, right. You've got a blanket covering my head, and then you take the blanket off, right, and I can see, then I'm the same person, whether I was covered or uncovered. But what I can see has changed. Not that I've changed, I'm the same person. But my situation has changed, the covering has been removed, now I can see. Yes. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. Hmm. Something else? Yes, go ahead.
So that
Yeah, it's a mysterious sort of statement here in Bhagavad Gita, as it is, one that's sometimes puzzling. This is one of the more technical and also puzzling purports of Bhagavad Gita, as it is. But whatever Krishna does is for his enjoyment. So he's expanding himself. To be honest with you, I don't really understand what Srila Prabhupada means here when he says that Krishna is expanding himself to enjoy in these different ways. He probably makes a statement here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is by nature full of joy, anandamaya vyasat. To enjoy his transcendental bliss, he expands into vijnanamaya, pranamaya, ganamaya, and annamaya. In the ultimate sense, everything is an expansion of Krishna's transcendental blissful nature. By his own pleasure, he expands himself in so many different ways.
But he also expands himself in the first way, which is, you know, just for food and just for...
Yeah, that's also an expansion. Or you can look at it this way, that the living entity is trying to enjoy transcendental bliss, and he finds a little transcendental bliss, or a little bliss, a little happiness in food. Everyone is looking for happiness. So someone looks for happiness in food. If I'm eating, especially if I'm eating nicely, I'm happy. Live for food, live to eat. So they're finding the all-blissful personality of Godhead, but only in the limited form of whatever it is they're eating. It's a realization of the Supreme, but not the most exalted realization. It's a realization of the Lord's blissful nature, but it's a very, like a shadow of his full, fully blissful existence, just a tiny reflection. If we come to the idea of life, then it's a little more. If we come to the thinking, it's more. If we come to spiritual realization, it's still more. When we come to realization of Krishna himself, then it's in its full glory, or full manifestation. Is that okay? Any other question here? Yes?
Is this a process that somebody goes through and achieves each stage through some means?
Yes, there's... it's a progressive... realization. One way, of course, is just by advancing to the human form of life, because the animals, automatically, they're in anamoya, pranamoya. They just want to eat, they just want to live. Thinking is not a big issue with them. Just eating, living, that's everything. When we come to the human form of life, our scope automatically expands. Now we can think. We may not, or we may just think about eating and living, but we have the opportunity. So if one is inquisitive, brahma-jigyasa, one actually wants to inquire about the Supreme, inquire about God, then his human life is said to actually begin. Otherwise, he has the human form, but he's not exactly a human being. He's called Dvipadapashu, a two-legged animal. He has the form of a human being, but really he's just an animal with two legs, because he hasn't yet begun the real business of human life, which is to try to understand God. So then one may try to understand God by different methods, by karma yoga, by jnana yoga, by bhakti yoga. By any of these methods, one may make gradual progress. And especially by the bhakti yoga system, one can make the most effective progress. So there are these different methods for spiritual realization. And by accepting a suitable means of spiritual realization, one makes progress, finally to the point of anandamaya, of understanding or realization of God, Krishna. That's possible only by bhakti yoga. Bhaktya mam abhijayati. Only by bhakti can one understand the personality of God.
So the enemies of Krishna, they you know, like Kamsa, he hates Krishna. So he's trying to kill him.
Yes.
Well, his realization is not, I guess, isn't very good realization.
No. Kamsa's realization is not. His realization, you can say, is pranamoya. What is Kamsa's business? Just to stay alive. Kamsa was the uncle of Krishna. He heard a message at the time of the marriage of his sister. He heard a message that the child of this sister will kill you, the eighth son will kill you. So although he was very happily driving his sister to the home of her new husband, suddenly he just took out his sword and was ready to kill her. Because his realization was, I got to stay alive at all costs. Nothing matters more than life. My life. Her life, we can sacrifice, but my life. So therefore he was demonic. And he couldn't appreciate the personality of Godhead, rather he was inimical. So he couldn't understand the actual nature of Krishna. He excluded himself from the all bliss. Rather than being joyful in touch with Krishna, he was miserable by turning away from service to Krishna. Yes?
We say that we know our field.
We know our field.
Our own field.
Yes.
We don't know another's field.
Yes.
But there is that element of empathy where you can feel another's pain.
There's an element of empathy where we feel another's pain. And so, although we say, I know my field, you know your field. But I know your field only by reference to mine. I don't experience firsthand. Therefore, we call it empathy. Empathy means that I see something that reminds me of how I would feel. You say you have a toothache. I say, oh. Because it reminds me of some pain that I've had. Maybe I had a toothache, or I have some other sort of ache, which I can, if I've never had a toothache, I can empathize. You know, even we say that. Well, you don't know what it's like. Somebody says, there, it's not so bad. No, you don't know what it's like. A child dies. You say, oh, that's okay. You say, no, you don't know what it's like to be a mother and lose your child. Because it's true.
Unless you were a mother and you lost a child.
Excuse me?
Unless you were a mother.
Unless you were a mother and then you have a closer reference. By comparison to yourself. Atmopam yena sarvatra. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, one sees, one is, a devotee is, has empathy for other living beings, because he compares them to himself. So I don't really know what you're experiencing. I don't really know what you're thinking. I don't really know what you're feeling. But I know how I would feel, how I would think, and so I project that. You know, sometimes I'm wrong. Sometimes I say, oh, you must be feeling, or I just assume you're feeling a certain way, and it's really a whole different thing. Because I'm just projecting how I would feel. I don't really know. But because we are similar, my field, after all, is not that different from your field. One farmer's field and the field of the farmer next to him are pretty similar. If I had problems with my crops, you probably had, you know, my corn got blight, your corn probably got blight too. So we have some comparative experience. But it's not that if you lost money in your field, I lost the same money. You know, my crop got destroyed and I lost, you know, $5,000. And the same thing happened to you. But it doesn't mean I lost $10,000, mine plus yours. It just means you're in a similar circumstance. The fields are similar and the numbers are similar. We can deduce that, or we can understand that by experience. The more one has realization, the more one will see that. Vidya vinaya sampanne brahmane gavihashvini shuni chayava shapake cha pandita samadarshan. The person who's more advanced in spiritual realization sees that the same kind of living being is there in all the different bodies. Not just in the human being, but in the body of an ant, the body of a tree, the body of a dog, the body of a fish. He sees that the person who has less understanding sees, well, other human beings are like me. Or maybe he's really limited. Other Americans are like me. They have intelligence, they have good qualities, but those gooks over there, or those Arabs over there, or those whatever they are over there, they're just, we depersonalize them. We don't attribute to them the same personal characteristics. We depersonalize them. That means we almost voluntarily shrink our vision. But a person who has broader vision will say, no, all the human beings are, we're all alike. I have feelings, they have feelings. I have a family, they have a family. I want to live, they want to live. But unless he expands his vision more, he thinks that way only about human society. And he doesn't extend it. Well, what about the animals? What about the fish? So I have empathy, I have sympathy, I have feeling for my fellow human being, and I'm sitting there eating the body of another fellow creature, a fish or a bird or a cow. Because I don't see. Even people say, well, the animals are different, they don't have souls. But the animal eats, I eat. The animal sleeps, I sleep. The animal has a family, I have a family. The animal loves its children, I love my children. Where's the such a great difference? I have feelings, they have feelings. So the broad-minded person sees, no, all the living entities, even the ant, it's also a living being like me. It's just in a different kind of body. But the life force or the consciousness is there in all the bodies.
Mm-hmm. And maybe the reason people think that way is because you said that human beings don't become really human beings until they start inquiring about God.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll look at those other species as having less of a... Because they don't inquire about God, and you feel that maybe they don't have a soul. And so it's okay to...
Yeah. Because the animals don't inquire about God, or we can say because they're less intelligent. They don't inquire about so many things. They don't inquire about science. They don't inquire about politics. They don't inquire about, certainly they don't inquire about God. So they're less intelligent. So we put them in a different category. We say dumb animals. And then, well, they're just dumb animals. But if you think about it, there are so many dumb human beings. Right? But all creatures are my brothers, but this brother is less intelligent, I'm going to eat him. Will the father say, well, that's all right. Suppose in your family, if there's one brother who's less intelligent, really maybe retarded or just slow. So if we say to the father, well, you know, this brother is, what's he good for? He's good for food. We can just, let's kill him and eat him. Will your father say, well, yeah, that makes sense. Actually, he's not on the same level that the rest of us. No. He also has a right to live. Mm-hmm.
In asking that question, I was really... Well,
sure.
In making that statement, I was really asking that question and realized that they progressively, you know, kind of shed some light on some things, but it kind of like opened up another area of me wanting to know, so do animals have souls? What constitutes a soul then? Human being has a soul. Kind of define that.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Good. Very good question. If we have a soul, Does the animal have a soul, and how do you define a soul to say whether we have them or they have them or what? When we think of soul, what Krishna brings forward as the characteristic of the soul is consciousness. And soul is not just a sort of a vague, nebulous idea, but it's very tangible. That the symptom of life is consciousness. After all, there's someone alive and someone dead. What's the difference between the living person and the dead person? It's consciousness, isn't it? You know, we have a relative who's alive and the next moment he's dead. So we say, oh, my father's gone, my mother's gone, my brother's gone. Why do we say gone? The body is right there. But we say that they're gone because the consciousness is gone. So consciousness is actually, once the consciousness is gone, the body is dead, it doesn't grow, it doesn't respond. So consciousness and soul are identical, you can say. Now then we look at the animals. Do they have consciousness? Yes. They have feelings. They have some simple thoughts. I'm going to go to this side of the pasture and eat something. They have desires. They want something. They want food. They want friendship. So thinking, feeling, willing, these are symptoms of consciousness. The animals have it, the fish have it, even the little ant has it. Consciousness. There's a difference between a living fish and a dead fish, a living bird and a dead bird. It's the same difference. Consciousness is present or consciousness is absent. But that consciousness is not just a material thing. It's described in Bhagavad Gita as being a different category of thing from the body. The body is made of matter, which is not conscious. Right? I have conveniently a glass of water here, and my body is made of so much water. So much of my body consists of water. But the water here is not conscious. The water in my body is not conscious. There's air all around us. There's air in the body. There's even fire. In your digestive system, there's fire. What did we say? 98.6, that's our temperature. There's a kind of a fire within the body. So there are material elements. The primordial elements are supposed to be earth, water, fire, air. So these things are there in the body, but they're not alive. They're not conscious. The water doesn't say, hey, you know, what's going on here? But within the body, there's consciousness. So it's the body that Krishna is calling the field, and it's the consciousness, the conscious living being, that Krishna is calling the knower of the field. So he divides reality up into those two categories, the field and the person who knows the field. Well, the person who knows the field is the consciousness, the soul. That help?
I understand. So the animals and humans are pretty much quite similar, except for the fact that there is that one thing there in the human, that which inquires about God and wants to know God and be connected with God. That's the difference. What is that? That's the thing that.
It's the same. It's the same inquisitive nature, but directed towards something different. The animals are also inquiring. The birds get up in the morning and they're chirping, and they're, if we could hear what they're saying, that there'd be things like, where's the food this morning? Excuse me?
Animals also inquire about
the elephant. There are elephants who are also praying to God. Yeah. But they're the extraordinary elephants. They're the extraordinary ones. But usually the inquiries are about eating, about sleeping, about defense. Hey, the tiger's coming. And the human beings do a lot of the same sort of inquiring. You look at the newspaper, it's all about eating and sleeping and fighting.
They could be happy and glorifying God also, the birds and
the birds? Yeah. Well, when they become self-realized, that is, in the spiritual world, the birds are always glorifying God. Or there's a stage of realization in which one is so advanced that one sees all the living beings to be engaged in Krishna's service. From our point of view, the birds are not engaged in Krishna's service. They're engaged in looking for food. But a pure devotee may be so absorbed in love for Krishna that he sees all other living beings as being absorbed in love for Krishna. In Vrindavan, the gopis were talking about the different living beings in Vrindavan, and they were describing them that way, that these trees are dropping little droplets of water from their branches, that they're crying tears from separation from Krishna. These other trees, the flowers that are growing, they're growing these flowers because they're feeling happiness in the presence of Krishna. These peacocks are dancing in jubilation by hearing the flute of Krishna. So the gopis were seeing all of these living beings as being absorbed in love for Krishna. So, of course, one explanation was that it was Vrindavan, where all the living beings are fully Krishna conscious. That's a special place. But from another angle of vision, the commentators have said that because the gopis were so absorbed in love for Krishna, they were seeing everyone. It said, Atmavan manyate jagat. One sees others to be like oneself. So a person who's a thief, for example, is thinking that everybody else is trying to cheat him. And a person who's generous-minded tends to take a generous view of others. He thinks that, no, these are good people. Maybe they've had some difficulty. Maybe they're in tough circumstances. But they're good people because he himself is like that. And so he thinks that way about others. So those who are always thinking of Krishna, how do you go? They sometimes see all that, oh, everyone is absorbed in thinking of Krishna. One time someone, Prabhupada, was walking and he said, the birds are also chanting Hare Krishna. And someone said, are they really Srila Prabhupada? Prabhupada said, sounds to me like they are.
Consciousness
and conscious both.
So I'm just sort of to see what the answer to the question is. So what if somebody is knocked unconscious? Do we say the soul is left?
If someone's knocked unconscious, do we say that the soul has left? Well, we'll say, even from the medical point of view, that his consciousness has now been diminished or it's been impeded. We won't say that he has no consciousness, but it's within. We knocked out the old saying is that he's seeing stars. There's some consciousness there, but it's within. It's very restricted. When consciousness finally leaves, then the person is gone. Yes, Rasraj Prabhu.
On the question when you were responding, you were saying consciousness and soul are identical, mind. And then you said thinking, willing, feeling are symptoms of consciousness. Now someone might say that mind also is characterized by thinking, willing, and feeling.
The mind is characterized by thinking, feeling, and willing.
So then say, what is it? So the definition.
They can also be ascribed to the mind. And so we say, well, if thinking, feeling, and willing are in the mind, then the mind is also spiritual, alive. Therefore, sometimes we speak of this distinction, mind and matter, mind over matter. That, because we see that the mind is thinking, and oh, if mind is over matter, I can make this glass move just by thinking about having it move, and so on. So mind over matter. So that's there, but we've come now to subtle territory. When we speak about the difference between, say, earth and water, it's very apparent. You can right away see, well, here's the earth and here's the water flowing over it. When you get to mind, when you get to intelligence, now you're getting to very subtle territory. You can't see it, you can't hear it, you can't touch it, you can't smell it. Sight, smell, you can't smell it, can't see it, can't hear it, can't touch it. One more.
Taste
it, you can't taste it. You can taste water, you can see fire, you can smell the earth, but you can't do any of those things when you come to the point of mind. So mind is now very subtle. Even the air, you can't see it, but you can feel it. When the wind is blowing, you feel its touch on your body. So air is already pretty subtle. It's something you can't even see. Now when you come to the point of the mind, we're really going subtle. And therefore, we have to analyze carefully its characteristics. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third canto, Lord Kapildev, in his Sankhya philosophy, does that. He says, well, yeah, here's the difference between earth and water in terms of its characteristics. Here are the characteristics of fire that are different from those of water, and here are those of air, and so on. And then he gets to mind and intelligence and says, here's the difference between mind and intelligence. The mind basically goes back and forth and says, well, I'd like that. No, I don't really. Well, but yeah, but no, I don't think so. Well, maybe. No. And flip-flop. But the intelligence analyzes. When we have intelligence, we say, well, do I really need this? Can I afford this? Is the one I have good enough? Will I get in trouble if I get this? And so on. Or will I be appreciated for making a wise choice? Intelligence analyzes, I mean, you decide something with your intelligence, then it's fixed. As long as it's on the platform of the mind, I think so, well, no, maybe, well, yeah, I don't know, could be, yeah, well, no. And we can go back 1,000 times, back and forth that way. But when the intelligence is done with the job, then we say, okay, no, absolutely no. Or yes, definitely. So the mind and intelligence. And the analysis is that higher than the mind is the intelligence, because the intelligence directs the mind. But higher than the intelligence is consciousness itself. And by that analysis, consciousness appears in intelligence or the mind because it's coming from the soul. Even we say, well, you know, there's consciousness in my body. My body doesn't really have consciousness of itself. It's not that the flesh is conscious. Or that the, you know, like I have a retina, I have eyes. I say, well, my eyes are seeing. My eye actually doesn't see anything. It sends little electric pulses through the optic nerve and it goes to the brain. I, whoever I am, I see, but the eye doesn't see. Although conventionally we say that the eye saw it. But the eyes don't see. I see with my eyes. That's really what you say. So I see with my eyes, I think with my mind, I discriminate with my intelligence. So these things, we say the body has consciousness because the soul has consciousness and distributes that consciousness throughout the body. But not that the consciousness is an inherent feature of the body itself, because when the soul leaves, then that feature is gone. Is that okay? Okay. Something else. Yes.
I just want to see if I'm understanding this correctly.
Okay.
From what I have understood, that the consciousness is the symptom of the presence of the soul, not the soul.
You've understood that that consciousness is the symptom of the soul, not the soul. But consciousness and soul, it's true. It's like the way that sunlight is a symptom of the sun.
Yes, but it's also not the sun.
Excuse me?
But the sunlight is not the sun.
The sunlight is not the sun, correct. And at the same time, the sunlight is the sun.
Well, from what I have understood, correct me if I'm wrong, okay, that soul is something that is beyond our experience. We have no experience of what soul is here because our experience deals with matter, both in its gross and subtle form.
Your experience is just with, our experience is just with matter in its gross and subtle forms.
Yes.
No. We also have experience of ourselves. Generally, our consciousness turns outward. We say, I want a new car, I want more money, I want a new girlfriend or boyfriend, I want to go to the Museum of Modern Art and see what they've got there, I want to see something, touch something, taste something, smell something. So my consciousness is turned outward toward things in the world. But you can also turn your consciousness inward upon itself. You can ask, who am I? Not how much does it cost, how much can I get, but turning inward on yourself, who am I? Consciousness has that quality of being self-reflexive. You can look at yourself and say, who am I? That's the beginning of spiritual realization. That's the beginning of spiritual realization. Descartes, I think and therefore I am. He looks at himself and says, well, apart from all this other stuff, when I think about myself, I can understand that I exist by direct experience. You can experience that you're a thinking being, that you're a living being.
Yeah, but that's also because I am thinking like that, I am using the mind, which is subtle matter.
Correct. And now you say, I'm using that mind.
Yes,
but who am I?
But
you say to yourself, I'm using my mind.
Yes.
Who is that I that's using the mind? And so you turn your attention.
That I have understood to be spirit.
Correct.
Okay. But I have no experience of what spirit is.
But you do. That you do. As you think, you first say, well, I'm all of my thoughts and all of that. Then you say, no, those thoughts are in my mind. I don't say I mind, I say my mind. So, all right, let me now bring my thinking about myself to a higher level. I say, well, I'm not my mind, I'm something higher. I'm not my intelligence, I'm something higher. And that way your consciousness of yourself becomes focused actually on yourself and not on your body and senses, not on your mind, not on your intelligence. From another point of view, we see the difference between a living body and a dead body, so we have experience of the presence of the soul, of presence of soul. Rasraj. Yeah, definitely.
I just want to bring up for more discussion from you. So when we say, I think, so we said that we distinguish between us and the mind. Now, there are people who are going to say, and that is cannibal, but I told that they said, that I is also a property of the false ego, which is a material element.
Mm-hmm.
So, in that sense, what he says has some basis, because we can say, even our sense of so we can question, like you said, we can question, I think I'm a body, I'm not a body. But many say transcendental was. And I think his point revolves around this issue that they can say that you have to also question that I.
That which, say again?
That I also we have to question because that is also a false notion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to ask myself, who am I? I say I'm an American, I'm Indian, I'm white, I'm black. And a thoughtful person will question those assumptions about himself. And one may arrive at the point that any sense of I is illusory. Any sense of I is material. But that's contradicted by Krishna himself. He says no. And then you'd have to ask, how does that I come into existence? If there's no individuality.
I'm not saying that. I'm only saying that even the I can be reflected in matter in a false way.
Yeah, I can be an I with a false sense of who I am. I can be absorbed in false ego, and who I am in my thinking is different from who I really am. I'm the enjoyer, I'm the owner of everything, I'm number one. But you had a different thought about it?
Mm.
Go ahead.
In other words, the point is that you were saying that it is true when I, the soul, perceives its identity to the false ego, then we may have a vitiated notion of I.
Mm-hmm. So we come to still more subtle. There's all my mental ideas. I say, well, no, that's the mind. That's not me. Then my intellectual discrimination. I say, well, then that's just a power that I have. That's not me. And then we come to my sense of self. And that sense of self can be misdirected. Technically, when the sense of self is directed toward matter, I have a false sense of self. But the sense of self can be directed towards spirit, then it's a real sense of self. But when we see the wrongly directed self, and then we say, well, no, then self is also an illusion, that's throwing out the baby with the bathwater. We have all this dirty bathwater, and we want to heave it, get rid of it, and in the process, we throw the baby out too. Well, that's not what we want to do. So some transcendentalists or philosophers, in trying to get rid of matter, they get rid of themselves entirely. In the process of getting rid of a false sense of identity, a false ego, they get rid of their real identity also. They toss that out, and then they're left disoriented or confused. Yes? Yes.
That we do that somewhere, because I've experimented that with myself at some point. I've experienced that with myself.
Yeah.
Where I sat down and I've really exhausted myself in asking question after question, you know, who is Krishna and who am I? You know, and if I'm not this body, I'm not this mind, I'm not this intelligence, you know, and even if I've never read any book in my life and I was the most ignorant person in the world, I still have this consciousness. Who is that consciousness?
Right.
That knows right from wrong.
Right.
Who is that? You know, the witness.
Yes.
So that's basically when you strip everything off, there is that witness, and it brings me back to being that part and parcel of the whole.
Yes. Yes, this is meditation, to focus that way, and as you say, strip everything else off and say, well, then what's left here? Yes. Correct. Mm-hmm.
Krishna transcends throughout. He expands into his creative potencies, and we understand that. He's beyond creation, and yet he's in creation. He has difference and similarity aspect to him.
Mm-hmm.
But he is also capable of transcending duality of being one. He says, I am the divine couple. That's not contrary. He says, I am sexual. That's not contrary to morality. So, for instance, whenever two people, say, in the office of marriage or something, are engaged in doing their duty, for instance, procreation, they could transcend their individuality and become one as a couple. And this is perhaps the closest maybe a karma could come to.
Yeah, we say in the marriage ceremony, I don't know if it's a marriage ceremony, but they say, husband and wife are one flesh. you know, that the husband and wife are now one.
But
one means, doesn't mean they've lost their individuality. It's not that because they become one flesh, now there's, you know, when he eats, she's no longer hungry.
There's a new identity.
Excuse me?
There's a new identity. Now there's
There's a new oneness.
And you may have children.
And then they also become one. Then you have a family, which is one.
One and one could equal three.
Yeah, I mean, you have two, you know, a husband and wife and two children. How many families are there? One. But it doesn't mean that because there's only one family, there's only one person in the family.
Ultimately, there's only one person, the supreme person.
Yes.
And when we say for this, that, and other, we tend to forget that we're part of the supreme person.
Yes, we're part. But we're individual parts. I'm part of the family, but that doesn't mean that I'm my father, I'm my mother. It means that there's oneness, and at the same time, there's difference.
Yeah, that's a very good
question. Something else.
Did you say earlier that thinking, feeling, and willing are distinguished from the mind? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's, I had a question about that.
Thinking, feeling, and willing are distinguished from the mind. I yes.
Yeah. Correct. So you were saying what the mind is. It's like when you say, well, I want to do this. No, I want to do mm-hmm. that. And you distinguish it by using the example of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Where you know, then you think about it, you analyze it, and that, then you direct it in that way. So it's higher than your mind.
Yes, that.
But if you take the feeling and willing, it seems difficult to distinguish. Like, well, I feel like doing this. Well, I feel like, well, that seems like feeling. Or it also seems like willing. Well, I want to do this. Mm-hmm. I want to do that. So how would you distinguish those two?
They're all related: thinking, feeling, and willing. But they're distinguished also. Willing thinking means to contemplate something. If you contemplate it, then you may feel that this would be very nice. But then it comes to the next point, you say, I want that. Or I'm going to do something, you know, I'm going to go to the store and get this. It's now come to the point of willing. And I think about it in terms of some mundane thing. I'm thinking about killing somebody. And the more I think about it, the more I feel like doing it. When I finally determine I'm going to go out and do it, it's a further evolution of the same idea. First it was just thinking, then it became feeling, then it became an actual determination to do it. So they're all related, but there are distinctions between the three. Shall we stop here? Are there any more questions? Okay. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.